Alexis.
You're listening to Central Crazies Podcast,
where we tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
And we let our crazy flag fly free with no limit. Hey guys, before we get started today, I wanted to remind you to follow us on Instagram at @central_crazies_podcast. And be sure to check out our podcast on Spotify and Anchor and YouTube. So today we're going to be talking about the Candyman.
Okay.
So it's Dean Arnold Quarle was born on Christmas Eve in 1939 to his parents Mary Robinson and Arnold Edwin Quarle. His mom adored him, but his dad was really strict, and he later said he was a man who didn't quote-unquote appreciate children.
Okay.
So, yeah. In 1942, the couple had a second son named Stanley, and 4 years later, after Stanley was born, 1946, Dean's parents divorced. Mm-hmm. When Dean Quarle was 7, he got sick with a rheumatic fever, which caused him to develop a heart murmur. This kept him from participating in gym class and other physical activities with the other children. So he became an outcast.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, and his mom said that he was, like, sensitive.
Yeah.
So being bullied bothered him. So therefore, he became a loner. I thought that was important to mention that he was isolated from the beginning. His parents then remarried and moved to Pasadena, Texas, right outside of Houston. So they stayed, even though they were divorced, they stayed, like, close together because mm-hmm. the dad had ended up being drafted into the Air Force. So the mom moved with him there.
Okay.
And then I guess they were like, we're going to try this again. So they remarried.
Wait, they got remarried?
Yeah, they divorced.
Okay.
And then they decide to reconcile and get married again.
Okay. Who am I to judge?
Funny you say that. 3 years later, they divorced again.
Oh my gosh, called it.
So yeah, it was not meant to be. And then his mom married Jake West, a traveling clock salesman.
Okay.
They also ended up having a daughter together named Joyce. The family began a candy company together, and they called it Pecan Prince.
I've never heard of it.
Me either. The shit's shut down now.
I'd hope.
They ran this in their garage, so after they got off from school, Dean and his brother Stanley would make the candy and package it, and their stepdad would take it on his sales route selling clocks. So I guess he sold clocks and candy.
Okay. It's always candy time, so I get it. I'm just kidding.
No, it is always candy time. Just kidding. I need to stop. So 1954 through 1958 were Dean's high school years. And despite still being a loner, his grades were good. He was in band. He played trombone. Band kid. Ayy. And he also dated some girls, but, like, nothing serious. Just casually dated.
Yeah.
So business started picking up for the family's candy company.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved to the Heights.
Where's that at?
It's a district in Houston, Texas, which is where most of their business was coming from, was Houston. So that's why they moved there.
Okay.
2 years after graduating, Dean's mom asked him to move to Indiana to help take care of his grandparents. During this time, he developed a relationship with a girl, and she ended up proposing to him, and he rejected her.
Oh.
She proposed to him, and he was just like, no.
No, wait, yeah, I think I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he eventually moved back and continued to help with the family business. He even had his own apartment above the candy shop.
Well, that's a pretty good location.
Yeah. This is where his nickname, the Candyman, originated, because he was known to give away candy to young boys in the neighborhood. He would invite the boys over to the candy factory after it was closed, which concerned his stepdad. And he told his wife, Dean's mom, that he thinks Dean might be gay.
Okay.
Dean's mom was super homophobic and refused to believe Dean was gay. She said he is a good, normal boy. And he just wasn't interested in being too close to others because he had seen so many broken marriages.
Which, that's a valid point. Because what? They got married, divorced. Married again, divorced.
Yes. But she just said he had seen so many broken marriages, and then Dean's mom divorced Jake, the clock salesman.
Oh my gosh.
And she opened her own candy business. It was called the Coral Candy Company.
Okay.
And Dean was the vice president of operations.
Okay.
So because they had their own company now, they actually had hired some people, some teenagers. And a teenage employee who was male told Dean's mom about Dean making a sexual advance towards him.
Uh-oh.
This boy's a teenager. Dean was an adult. And instead of asking Dean about it, she fired the boy. This is the second person that come to her. Hey, I think your son's gay. And he's also flirting with underage boys. And she just fired the boy. That's all she did. In 1964, Dean was 24 years old, and he was drafted into the Army. But he hated it. And he was honorably discharged 10 months later because he had applied for a hardship discharge, stating that his mom needed him to work in the family business.
Which, I mean, it's kind of true.
Yeah. When he came back, he told his friends that while he was in the military, he came to the realization that he was gay. And he had his first encounters with men while he was stationed in the military.
Oh, okay.
He resumed his position as the vice president of the family's candy business. Dean continued giving candy to children, especially teenage boys. And he would flirt with the teenage male employees at the candy shop. He even had a fucking pool table installed at the back of the factory, which not only the teenage employees hung out at, but other youths in around the area as well. It just became known as a place, hey, you can come hang out here.
Okay.
And he's like the cool older guy.
I mean, that's kind of cool. That's like the guy off of Dazed and Confused, the guy that Matthew McConaughey plays, and he's like, all right, all right.
I haven't seen Dazed and Confused.
Girl.
I know. I'm so uncultured.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
We'll have to watch it sometime.
I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it was.
And what's that other movie that's like Hot Tub Time Machine? Or is that a movie?
Yeah, that is a movie.
I haven't seen that either.
Okay, so, well, that one's on the list.
We need to make like an actual list.
So he was the cool old guy who...
Pretty much. Like, I mean, he was like in his mid-20s and he was having all these things that attract young men.
Okay. That's like all the pedophiles who have like video games or baseball cards and...
Exactly. Like, in 1967, Dean befriended 12-year-old David Brooks.
Oh, no.
Who was in sixth grade. And he was one of the many kids that Dean gave free candy to. But he met him at the pool table, like, in the back of the factory. Because, like I said, a lot of people would hang out there.
Yeah.
David Brooks was a skinny kid with glasses who was neglected by his divorced parents.
Oh, no. And divorce, like, not going to watch him as well. Ugh.
So, really, David Brooks was Dean Coral's first victim, in a way. David later said that Dean was the first adult who didn't make fun of him. David idolized Dean, and Dean was kind of like a substitute dad for him.
Yeah.
Dean would give David money and allow him to stay at his apartment if David needed a place to stay.
That was nice.
Yes. Although, Dean soon began pushing a sexual relationship between the two. Dean would give David Brooks money and other gifts in exchange for David allowing Dean to perform oral sex on him.
Did he let him do it?
Yes, of course. Dean's mom ended up closing closing the candy shop and moving to Colorado with his sister. She would keep in touch on the phone, but she never saw him in person again. So Dean's pretty much, he's alone. He has no family in the Heights now.
Okay.
And he's still continuing to do what he did. He chose to stay.
He's still running the candy business?
No. Okay. I guess without his mom and his sister, it was nothing because she closed it and left. And he began working as a relay tester at the Houston Lighting and Power Company.
Okay.
In 1970, David Brooks was 15 and he dropped out of high school. This is also the same year that Dean committed his first known murder, which was 18-year-old Jeffrey Conan, who was a college freshman hitchhiking with another student near the area where Dean lived. So, like, he was trying to, his parents lived in Houston, so he got dropped off at the corner where Dean lived. And it's likely, we don't know for sure, that Dean offered him a ride to his parents' house. His body was later found 3 years later, buried at High Island Beach. Forensic scientists say he was manually strangled with a cloth stuffed in his mouth. His body was nude and bound by the wrists and ankles and covered in lime and wrapped in plastic.
Covered in lime?
Yeah, I was going to look up what that meant. I don't know why. I forgot to, though. I don't know why he covered. It becomes a running theme with him. He will cover the bodies in lime.
I'm going to check on that, but go ahead and tell me some more about him.
Okay, so around the time of this murder is when one day David Brooks walked into Dean Coral's home and caught him assaulting two boys who were strapped to a plywood torture board.
Okay.
Dean offered to buy David a car in exchange for his silence, which he did buy David a green Chevy Corvette. Brooks later told police, Dean jumped up and said, I'm just having some fun. And he promised me a car if I kept quiet. Later, he admitted he killed them, and he bought me a Corvette. After accepting the car, Dean offered David $200 for any boy he could lure to Coral's place, which David accepted.
Oh, that's like some Epstein stuff. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Dean Coral loved raping and killing these teenage boys. After getting them extremely drunk and giving them drugs, he would use pliers to pull out pubic hairs one by one. He would insert glass rods into the penises of the victim.
Okay.
Before smashing the glass rods while they were still inside.
Oh, ouch. Like, I know the rod thing's a thing some people do, but.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or he would thrust large dildos into the victim's anuses before removing the dildos and raping them. He would sometimes castrate his victims while they were helpless on the board strapped to the torture board.
Oh.
Sometimes he used his teeth to castrate the victims.
Ouch.
Yes, all of his victims ranged from 13 to 20 years old, and they were mostly mid-teenaged boys. And Dean Coral's his mid-20s.
That's not even a fighting chance. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah, like, he would, you know, you think you're coming to this cool older guy that has alcohol and he has drugs, he has weed, like, you're just coming there to hang out.
Yeah.
When really, it was a fucking trap, and he has one of his first victims being his accomplice now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yes. So, December 15th, 1970, David Brooks lured two 14-year-old boys named James Glass and Danny Yates away from a religious rally held near Houston Heights to Dean's apartment. I'm sure David was like, hey, I know some place we can go, like, ditch this place, and, you know, we can smoke weed and, like, hang out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Both of the boys were tied to the opposite sides of Dean's torture board, and then they were raped and strangled and buried in a boat shed Coral had rented on November 17th. And he uses this boat shed multiple times. We'll find out. That's where he buries bodies. 6 weeks later, January 30th, 1971, after the double murders of James Glass and Danny Yates, Dean and David met two teen brothers named Donald Jerry Worldrop. I don't know. I hope I said that right. Walking to a bowling alley. They lured the boys into Dean's van and took them to his apartment, where they were raped, tortured, and strangled before Dean and David buried them in the boat shed. Between March and May of 1971, Coral killed three more boys between the ages of 13 and 16. Two of the victims were David Hilgejeist.
Sounds right to me.
And Molly Winkle. They were abducted and killed together on May 29th, 1971. All of these victims were from the Heights. And the sad thing about this is that the police didn't really take it seriously when people would say, like, my son's missing.
Okay.
They just assumed they were runaways. And the sad thing is not all the parents actually cared, like, in the Heights. It was low economically there. So it wasn't uncommon for boys to run away. But one of the boys' parents that did, like, actually did not believe that her son would run away.
Yeah.
Was David Hilgejeist's mom. So when the police weren't any help, one of David Hilgejeist's friends, 15-year-old Wayne Henley, helped distribute posters that David Hilgejeist's parents had printed offering a reward for info to the boys' whereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
In August of 1971, David Brooks' acquaintance, Reuben Watson, was walking home from the movies when Brooks persuaded Reuben to attend a party at Dean's house.
Wait, he took his own friend?
Yes, it was an acquaintance, so
that's
what it says.
I'm not going to anybody's house ever again.
Yeah, like, it's kind of scary because this is like, I don't know. It's just crazy because you would think that you would be able to trust, like, even if they were your acquaintance, like, I wouldn't think, like, oh, I'm going to a party. Like, I would still want to go with somebody that I knew, though.
Mm-hmm.
But he just thought he wanted to hang out and, like, do cool things. So, after he persuaded him to attend the party at Dean's house, soon after arriving, he was strangled and buried in the boat shed.
Okay, so that's number two in the boat shed. Okay.
The two other boys, well, the first victim was buried at some beach. And so, I think that was the second victim at the boat shed. I don't know. Because they did kill, like, groups for some reason, like, pairs of boys that would come as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sad, because you would think, oh, I'm going with my friend, like, I'll be good.
Yeah. Don't get separated, and you're good.
Yes. And I just think it's crazy how Dean Coral, like, doing all these things to attract, like, even after he was already attracting young boys by giving out free candy, which is crazy because you always hear about that. Don't talk to strangers who give you candy.
Is this why?
That's what I'm wondering. Did Dean Coral start this? Like, because he did use that to entice boys, and then he had the pool table,
mm-hmm.
which, like, obviously attracted them because they thought it was a cool place to hang out. And now at his own apartment, even though he doesn't have the candy thing going on anymore, he's providing them with drugs, alcohol, weed. So they think, oh, this is a cool place we can go and chill because they can't do it anywhere else.
Yeah.
They're like 15, you know, sometimes younger, sometimes older. So later that winter, in 1971, David introduced Wayne Henley. If you remember, that was David Hilgajai's friend.
Yeah, the one who helped put up the flyers.
Yes. Yeah. Which his friend ended up being murdered, but he didn't know that yet.
Yeah.
See, nobody knew what was happening to these boys. They were just missing. And there was no real efforts being made to find them. So, yeah, David Brooks introduced Wayne Henley to Dean Quirrell, who Wayne Henley may have been an intended victim for Dean, but instead he became Dean's second accomplice.
What?
And we're going to leave it at that because shit gets real. Bye.